Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside Zansberger Studios. What happens when you're sensitive to all the senses? Touch, smell, taste, and sound? Well, my next guest has just that issue. But she also deals with disability in a holistic approach way. So sit back, relax, and grab your favorite beverage, and let's learn more about her. See you there.
I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own. Follow what the group is thinking, bottle up my intuition till it's popping out the box that I don't fit in. I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Today I'm joined with Nicole Scherer. Welcome to the show, Nicole.
Hello, Reed. I'm really excited to be here today.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself?
So I am a person. I figured I'd start a little bit with a joke. I have a background in industrial organizational psychology. I say you need a degree to say it or spell it. And I have a background in conflict resolution. I have a differing capability. I don't like the word disability because I don't like the way that it disses people. I think a lot of times when we have different capabilities, it creates a way that we have to be more resourceful and a way of navigating the world that is different than other people and can create creativity for others and a way of innovation. And I've done a few TED Talks. And so I am more of a belonging expert and a workplace expert around diversity, personality, diversity around accessibility, conflict resolution, trauma informed, all those wonderful things that go into belonging.
Oh, as we were talking before, you mentioned you started a couple of programs. Why don't you tell me a little about some of those programs that you're working on?
So currently, I've been working with the consulting division of the DEI of let me start back, APA's consulting division DEI program, and I've been creating a diversity. Accessibility through diversity lens. What that means is how genders, races, and cultures see accessibility. Now, why that is important is because nobody sees accessibility through one lens. And the other reason why that's important is because we've been pigeonholing disability. So we'll see people who are in wheelchairs are over here, autism's over here, ADHD is over here. And then what ends up happening that I believe that that's important, but also we need to understand what happens when people are invisible, have invisible identities. What's the pattern that happens of the trauma they go through versus the trauma that people go through when their identity is visible? What happens if let's say a Latino woman walks in with an invisible disability versus a Black man that walks in with a visible disability? What are the patterns there that happen? And so, when that person walks into the workplace or walks into a therapy session or walks into an educational institution, what are the overall reaching way that they're going to perceive so that you now know how to navigate working with them and don't create more trauma on them?
All right. So, how can we correct the way that companies see disability so people like you and me and anyone else gets treated fairly?
So one of the ways is I'm going to share in 2008, it cost companies $359 billion in conflict. That is so huge. Now that impacts retention. Now I don't have how much the number is on retention, but it's like somewhere it costs like I think half of a person's salary plus the training of that new person plus part of that salary. So it costs a lot of money to let go of a person and retrain that person. So we have to think about how much retention costs a company. Then you also have to think about how much innovation it is. Innovation is what keeps a company alive. If you don't have innovation, think about Blockbuster. Blockbuster's not around nowadays because we don't have, you know, the Blockbuster didn't keep up with the times around innovation. We have Netflix. Netflix kept up with innovation. So this is so important to companies, and this is why people with different capabilities are so important to be there. If you do not train your HR staff on how to be trauma informed, how to be informed on people with their different cultures, races around accessibility. If you are not creating trainings around conflict resolution, if you are not creating trainings around accessibility, you're going to have problems with retention and you're going to have problems with innovation because if you aren't safe, people aren't going to trust you. So that's why the programs that I'm developing, because I also have trauma-informed programs, I also have things around personality and how people learn through their personality. I have all these programs around this for HR because I feel that we aren't setting our HR people up and our managers up for success when they don't understand these basic concepts.
Now, from reading your profile, you said you feel like you were autistic and that you have sensitivity. What kind of gave away the fact that you might feel you might be autistic?
Oh, this is a long, long time ago. So according to the American Psychological Association, and one of the reasons I bring up, I try and cite things is because I think I'm just going to take a step back before that, is like our politicians will say things and then they don't have the citations to back it up, or people will sometimes say things and they don't have the proof to back it up. So I really try to have the proof to back up what I say. I think that's really important. But according to the APA, the American Psychological Association, older women, and I might say older women, women above the age of about 20, 22, were not given autistic testing. And there's a lot of women out there that have autistic testing. I was lucky in high school, I got learning disability testing. When I was born, I had a bump on my head from forceps. I was really different from the rest of my family. I've always been sensitive to all my senses are extremely sensitive. And I was tested for a learning disability in high school. And I was visual and auditory, almost like auditory visual dyslexia, but not dyslexia. It was a processing disorder. And it was really hard to navigate things, spatial disabilities, all sorts of things around those areas. And so, but that sensitivity really was like, okay, how do I navigate the world? No one ever talked about putting headphones on until I got older. So I have to have headphones like everywhere I go. And then recently I was at an APA conference and me and my partner were sitting in the back room and we were snickering the whole time, not because the speaker said anything, you know, we kind of felt bad because we were snickering, but we're like, that's me. That's me. That's me. And so, but it's so hard to get a diagnosis. And a lot of people who are older are really struggling because they're focusing still on younger kids and not on older people.
When you got diagnosed with your learning disability, did that sort of like open your eyes to like, oh, this explains why I'm having so much trouble struggling with trying to understand my schoolwork?
Actually, it opened the door more for my mother. I went through a program called Help Elevate Learning Processes. It was called Learn to Learn back then. And when they tested me, I went through some things to help me do better. I was tested at freshman level in high school as a freshman level in college, but I wasn't able to process the information. I remember having to learn how to write with both hands. It was a really challenging program to go through while going to high school. It did help in some aspects. But I've been on a few car accidents and I think I've had some brain trauma because of it. And so I would need to go through the program again, but it did help with that. I know that having the proper reasonable accommodations in the workplace and in school make a huge difference. And I also know that the ADA has not caught up with what proper accommodations look like for each individual. And it's hard, it's challenging, and sometimes they conflict. And so there's ways to navigate around that. But people have to be open to it.
Right. Have you found ways to work with you, your disabilities or around your disabilities?
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh, prefacing. I highly, 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 highly suggest prefacing. Now, what prefacing is it's like saying, you know, I want to let you know that sometimes I misunderstand things. I'm really want to work with you. However, I have auditory and visual processing. It's a different way of doing things. And because of that, sometimes I misunderstand things. And so I may repeat back to you for clarification. Sometimes it can be quite hilarious. Sometimes it can be serious. But I really want to work with you. Prefacing is huge. It's also asking for what you need, and what and really explaining that it's not about a want. This is where I think a lot of people struggle around accessibility. They think it's a privilege. They think it's not equity. They think it's like you're asking is we have to see it like as a 5 foot woman asking or a 5 foot person asking for a ladder when the 6 foot person can reach the shelf. That is not a privilege. You're giving the 5 foot person the ladder. They're not going to crawl up the shelves to get the I mean, they're not. So we have to look at this. This is not a privilege to clarify to me when I have a processing. It's not a privilege to give me earphones so that I'm not overstimulated. It's not a privilege to dim the light so I don't get a migraine. That's equity. So I can do the same things that anyone else can do.
All right. Now, you say you're autistic. Have you figured out your special interest?
What do you mean by special interests?
When you're when you're autistic, you have a special interest, is which is something you focus in on and that you love, that you can almost info dump back onto somebody because you studied it to death.
Oh, mine's personality. I have studied to death how people create belonging. And I study the patterns of people. People are like trees. I know that sounds so wild, but I think it's because I never felt belonging. And when we start to study the patterns of personality and the patterns of people, we can learn how to connect. So I really have studied, I've researched like how we have fracturing, how we heal, how we get dis you know from a how spiritual diseases are caused, dark personalities, all the things around people, and the patterns of people. And it's more not to it's how we can create connection because connection is so important. And it's also how to protect yourself. Some people study it to manipulate. I don't study it to manipulate. I study it to so is this person safe? Is this person not safe? How do I navigate what's going on in the situation? And how do I create that connection? How do I know when to walk away? How do I and how do I have boundaries? And so I used it to really learn that connection because I was really struggling with connecting.
Now, you say you have your sensitivity. How do you deal with them on a day-to-day basis, like going out, eating? Because I know there are a lot of people who won't eat certain foods because of the textures. There are certain people that don't like certain textures on their walls, or who wear sunglasses because the sun's too bright or the light in the building's too bright. How do you deal with it all, considering you have just about every one of the sensitivity issues?
Well, that is where I always tell when I go out to restaurants, if they're too noisy, we don't go to those ones. Portland's pretty good. Yeah, I gotta say, if you ever get to visit the airport at Portland, they actually interviewed autistic people and designed our airport for autistic people. It is so amazing. I bring headphones everywhere I go. If it's too noisy, I'll leave. Or I'll walk away and I'll go take breathers. I always look at the menu and I will order what I need. And if they don't have it, I will not eat it. And that's huge for me. I don't go to restaurants that don't eat food that I can't eat. I don't go to crowded places. And if I have to go to crowded places, I come home and I spend more time just like this morning, I had to spend a afternoon where I was going to be around a lot of people. I don't have a problem being in front of people, a lot of people, but it's more being in with a lot of people. And so I spent the morning just doing a lot more self-care because I was around more in with more people. So those are things that I do. I make sure that if I have people are going to get too close to me, I say, I need this amount of space. Always say what I need. I'm never out too much with too bright of light. I always have my sunglasses with me. It's more the LED lights in the buildings that really bother me. And so I'm never in those buildings for too long. And those are the kinds of things that I do.
All right. Now, what tips do you have for those who are dealing with like sensitivity issues such as your own?
I have gotten little earbuds that I can put in my ears that hang on my wallet. Those are super important to have those where you can have them really close, where you're bringing with them all the time. Communicate with your friends. Have people who are with you, if you can always have someone with you that is understanding of your situation, that you can say, hey, I would really like you to help me if you start to see that I get a little irritated. Because irritation is kind of like the clam that's creating the pearl with the sand. You get irritated. You can tell when someone's getting irritated. And so, have people around, hey, maybe I'm not putting my sunglasses on and I'm squinting. Say, hey, is it a little bright for you? Give those people that permission. Those are some of the things I highly recommend, is just have people around you that will help you with that. That's why I was having some meltdowns, and my partner helped me with the ear. That's what got me started to make sure that I have that. And then sometimes people will say that to me, and they've given people permission. And then also have conversations and notice people around you. I remember being in line for a burger, and they have the best burgers in this one area. And this young person was getting triggered, and I could tell he was overwhelmed. And the parents were apologized. I said, "Don't apologize. I get overstimulated too. Here are my and share it. Share it with others, because sometimes some people may go, oh my gosh, where did you get those? I need that."
Yeah, I've come across that. I was at a Subway and I was waiting to get a sandwich for me and my mom. And there was this girl there and she's just going off on the people. No, I don't want this. I want that. No, I want this. I don't want this. I want a bowl. I want this. I want that. And I realized she's autistic. She's probably a level two or three by the way she's acting. And I see that I see her yelling at her parents, and I'm thinking, I just feel for them. I mean, she's probably having some kind of sensory meltdown, trying to explain to the people at the other end what she wants. And I just felt for them.
And I think that's part of the thing, is when we're having these sensory overloads, we're getting grumpy. We're not knowing how to communicate. We're not knowing how to breathe through it. And because a lot of us haven't had the training of, let's breathe through it, let's pull us aside, let's be taken out of the situation, or let's find a way to deal with the sensory overload. And there's some great things around DBT. But you also have to understand sometimes there's safety issues. So that can play a factor. Safety is completely different in those kinds of situations. But DBT is very great in helping along skills when you're dealing with these kinds of things. How can you breathe through the situation? How can you take a step back? Meditation is so helpful as well, because you're learning how to breathe as you're feeling overloaded. It's really hard, but I think a lot of it is we really need to be teaching a lot of these skills to navigate that, and to just say, hey, I'm really overstimulated. Even just acknowledging it feels so good to say, I'm overstimulated. I can't handle this. And our society needs to really work on that, because I can't tell you how many times I've walked into a food cart area where one group is playing one kind of music, another group's playing another kind of music, and they're playing it so loud. And I'm like, what is going on here? That's not good for our brains, whether you're autistic or whether you're not autistic.
I mean, I remember, I think I told you the story when we first talked. I was just about to go overseas to school. My mom and I, my dad are at the airport, and we walk up to the desk, and the guy goes, "Only one parent's allowed." I'm fine at this point, and then as we start talking with the guy, trying to plead with him, all of a sudden I just feel my senses just coming in down on me, and all of a sudden out of nowhere I just break into tears. I knew in my head this wasn't a tantrum, this was a meltdown, because things like this normally don't affect me. I'm a very laid back person. I mean, my senses and my thinking go out the window, and I'm saying things like, I wish this guy would die, and this and that, and I'm thinking, no, my mom's like, that's not right. It's not right. He's just doing his job. And then my father just finally says, "Your mother will go with him." And the guy goes, "There's a glass wall over there with a revolving door and a guard. He can sit at the other side." And we go. And then the minute the gate call comes for boarding, it's like a light switch. And all of a sudden, I stop crying and I'm back to normal. What people don't realize is, and I explain this in my book, what a meltdown is, think of it in computer terms, it's the blue screen of death. You get so much information going in at you, your brain can't process it fast enough and it crashes. And then your crying is that reboot. Or whatever you're doing, it's that reboot for your body to come back to normal. Sometimes it can take hours and sometimes it could take minutes, but it depends on that person.
And I think that's what shocks a lot of people is when it takes such minutes and you're like back to normal and they're like, what happened? And you're like, oh, I'm okay. And they're like, okay. You were just upset a second ago. Yeah, I'm done. It's processed. Okay. And that's the way I think a lot of it is you've processed the information, you've had your meltdown, now you're ready to move on. And the other people around you are like, we've got ash all over us. We're not ready to deal with it. Well, I'm done. And the people around you are like, but you just freaked out. Yeah. It was, yeah, you gave me too much information. I'm overstimulated.
See, that's what people need to understand is noise, sound, smell, touch. All of that is information to our mind. People don't understand that. That's why you put us into, we go to a restaurant that's got loud music. You'll begin to see, we'll start out normal and all of a sudden we'll go down and down and down and down and down to the point where we're like, I need a break. I need a breather. And
And then
people
what?
don't understand what's happening.
No.
It's that loud music pounding on our brain.
Well, and then people like to say, well, wouldn't it be nice for you to just tell us when you're getting to that point?
We don't know.
We don't know. We can't. Our brains doesn't, our, it's like a computer is going to give you warning, 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 we're about ready to crash. A lot of times a computer doesn't give you that warning.
No, it just goes boom.
Boom. Exactly. And so sometimes you can, but majority of the time you can't. I wish I could. I really wish I could. And sometimes I'm giving you little clues, but you're not picking it up.
No, people don't. And that's the hard thing. People don't pick up the
No.
clues. And that's why when you read stories or you see it on the news, either they're getting tackled by the police, tased, tied up, pulled out of school,
Yeah.
because they don't understand what's going on in our head.
Exactly. And I think a lot of it is we are giving off these subtle clues. We are telling people it's that people aren't listening. Hey, can you turn the music down? I mean, that's a clue. That is a clue of, the music's loud. Can you turn it down a little bit? So I think a lot of times, I know I'm saying a lot of things, but what clues are we giving? And maybe a lot of it's been we haven't been listened to for so long, or we haven't been trained there's two parts. A lot of it is we haven't been trained how to communicate. We haven't there's there hasn't been a lot of training on how do we communicate when we're starting to get overstimulated. There's been so much of the overlapping thing of ch children should be seen but not heard. So if you're not training children how to communicate in a skillful way, they're getting overstimulated, then what do you expect? When they become adults, they don't have that training. The other thing is when people are subtly saying it because they're not told, like what you told me about earlier, people were telling you that they went to the boss telling you that you stood too close, but they wouldn't talk to you. Well, that says that people aren't being trained to say what they need and what they want. They're becoming passive aggressive. Well, if we aren't trained to speak what we need, what we want, majority of people aren't, how do you expect us to be able to say, hey, this is too overstimulating for us? Pretty soon, all of a sudden, it's just going to crash and then we're going to be out there. So, really, what needs to happen is we need to have more training in schools with parents, with people, with HR. How do you communicate skillfully what you need and what you want and that it's safe?
I mean, one of the best examples of what it feels like is I read somewhere is imagine you have a kid, they're running late for work, they're running late for school, and you just pull them out of the shower, you throw on their shirt, you want it's backwards. They get on a bus and it's loud and it's noisy, and they gotta deal with all of the senses of being wet, having their clothes on backwards and itchy, the noisiness of the bus. And then getting to school and going, dealing with all of that, and then coming home, all those senses are pounding on your brain. Your brain can't possibly process it fast enough, and that's why your kid has that meltdown, or why you have a meltdown. It's all those senses at once coming in at you.
And what I actually had to say to someone who was, I had a noisy neighbor that was just could not get it. And they would have parties and be loud and wake me up. And I also have sleep apnea. And so I finally said, my senses are so sound sensitive that it's like someone's punching me in the face constantly. And you're saying, oh, does that hurt? Oh, does that hurt? Oh, I'm so sorry. Does that hurt? And then it physically hurts me to the point where it's like, as, and I said, when you do this and I send them an article, it's like you're physically hurting me. They finally got it. I shouldn't have to go to that point to say that to someone. But that's what that's like. Exactly what you described is what it's like for people. It's almost for some people, it's like you're punching them and you're punching them and you're punching them and they can't get away from being punched.
Yeah. Now, do you plan on getting tested?
I've been trying to get tested, so I'm trying to figure out another way to get tested. I've been trying to figure that out for a long time, but then all these other things keep happening. So I would like to get tested because there's grants out there that can help me with the research I'm doing on personality. I recently found out there's some things on personality that could be in the brain regarding hunter and gatherer. And that's we feel the belonging languages is hunter and gatherer, and we can actually figure out what the communication modality is around that. And so because showing that I'm autistic can help with doing the research that I'm actually doing in that end around personality and belonging, that would be so powerful to do. So if I can find a way to get tested, I'm going to get tested. I really, really do want it. It's just, again, it's been challenging as an adult. So if I could get it, I would get it in a heartbeat. Again, I find myself very fortunate to have had my learning disability testing. And I've done neuropsych exams, and those have been a disaster because they keep coming back with, you're not capable. Actually, I had a neuropsych exam, and the guy said, basically told me I was stupid and that there's no way I had a bachelor's degree when I had a bachelor's degree, and that there's no way I could do my master's degree. And then I did my master's degree in 6 months' time with honors with my learning disability.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, so yeah, again, what it was is that college gave me the proper reasonable accommodation.
I
And
mean,
we have to understand what accommodations people need to be successful.
yeah, I mean, it's the same thing with me, and I believe we talked about this when we first talked. I was told I couldn't achieve a four-year university or even work. And look where I'm at now. I have a bachelor's and a master's. I traveled through Europe all on my own. And it's like these people, these social workers, case workers, don't know how to deal and talk with those of us who are disabled. They don't know what we are capable of. All they know is what they see on paper.
Well, and I think that's, again, a lot of it is we haven't had some of the proper training we need, and they haven't had the proper training they need. And so it's this combination of, again, if someone's punching, again, like I shouldn't have had to say to my neighbor who's really loud what I to the level of what I was needing, but she finally got it when I had to say that. The thing with it is we aren't trained how to listen, we aren't trained how to speak. And that's, I think, some of the biggest things. What do we need, and how do we, like, people, like I one time said to a person, we need menstruation days for women in the workplace. And a man said to me, I should get that. And I looked at him and I said, that's not, it's not about equal. You're not going through that. It's like a person who doesn't have autism wanting to have and doesn't have sensitivity to lights saying, I don't want the lights to change because it's not fair to me. And yet they don't have any sort of visual, or they say it's not fair regarding the lights changing. You get what I'm saying? That's not fair that they can have dimmer lights because I should have the light the way I want it to be, even though they have no problem around that area or no sensitivity. And so we have to understand what the difference is between equal and equity. And I think, and we also have to understand how to communicate and how to listen to what people are needing. And I think these are some of the biggest things that are going on in our world, is we're talking about, it's not, if it's not fair to me, you shouldn't get it. And we also need to understand the struggles that people go through. And how do we create equity for those people so that they can have a living wage, so that they can have the same that everyone else has. They can have the same rights. We shouldn't have a 2 times higher unemployment rate for people with disabilities. That's not okay. We shouldn't say, oh, we're going to make this building and we're not going to make it accessible. And yet, okay, so I'll give an example. I was telling this last night. We have how many times have you pushed that button to open a door automatically when your hands are full?
Everyone does it.
Everyone does it, but it's not meant for you. It's meant for a person who's in a wheelchair. It's meant for someone who can't open the door because they've got crutches. But yet everybody uses it who doesn't have that differing capability. So why are we saying people with disabilities cost? Why are we keeping them in poverty? Why are we treating them the way we're treating them when we use the same things, whether it impacts us or not? And I think that's where our mindset needs to change.
Now, is that why you're dealing with disabilities from a holistic point of view? It's because of the way things need to be changed?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is, because I think there's ways to just really see things as innovation helps everybody.
I mean, people, and I totally agree. I mean, those with disabilities need to be treated differently than everyone else, but there needs to be an equal view of you got to understand, I need this for that. I know it's not fair to you that I get this, but without this, I can't work.
Yeah. And it might even benefit you.
That, I mean, it's like when I talked with the Assistant Minister of Autism in Australia, she told me they literally cut the lights in a store and lowered and took off the beeping from the registers for those who are autistic. And not only did it help those who are autistic, it brought in more business.
Exactly. So if we understand that sometimes what helps a person with disabilities actually helps the actual people who are non-disability or non-differing capabilities, guess what? It created more business for them. And that's what I'm trying to do by showing this and saying, hey, it's not all about cost. Do you know that 56% of reasonable accommodations cost employers zero? That's more than half. Do you know that even with that, it costs maybe the most one time $500, and an employer can probably write that off on their taxes. On top of that, if they really needed to, there's agencies that can help pay for that. So there's no excuse why you can't work with a person with disabilities.
True. Now, let's talk a little bit about your books. What had prompted you to write them?
So these ones are about personality. These ones prompted me because I saw that people needed to figure out how to belong. Everyone, like Brené Brown, talks about belonging, but there's no belonging modality. Gary Chapman wrote about the love languages. And then NLP is about the five senses and how we process the five senses. Well, I figured the belonging language. This is all about how our personalities belong and connect. And I have a compilation of all the books together. I just have to re-put it back up on Amazon. I have not put that up on Amazon yet again. And so that's like a 700 page, 500 page book. I mean, it's a pretty big book, but it talks about the self, it talks about relationships, talks about the workplace. I also have a dark personalities book that I am in the process of finishing. I'm writing a avatar healing book, and I'm in the process of the training manual that I'm working on, the book for the APA regarding how different races see accessibility and cultures and genders. So I've got several books and trainings. I have trainings that I'm about ready to put out too as well on personality and accessibility and things like that.
And what kind of recognition have they gotten?
I've gotten TED Talks out of them, so that's kind of where the recognition has gotten. I haven't been able to promote them as much because of personal stuff. So I did really good promoting them the first year, and then I went and did a couple of TED Talks, and then I started doing some other things and doing. I had to do a little more research on some stuff. So yeah.
What was it like giving TED Talks?
Oh, that is interesting. The one recommendation I would give is interview your host, know your host. Out of all the three TED Talks I did, I had one host who was absolutely amazing. Two hosts were a little more challenging. And know your host. Interview your host. Even if they offer you a TED Talk, don't necessarily go with them. The host that you have to be interviewed, you just don't get a TED Talk because you want one. It's really hard to get them. So you have to be vetted to be able to get a TED Talk.
Right. Because I mean, I can tell you, with my book, I do plan to apply for a TED Talk because I believe my message is an important one.
Yeah.
Stepping outside of the comfort zone when if you're autistic or not. And I know you agree that it is very vital that you step outside of your comfort zone because the world keeps moving.
Yeah. And it's really hard when you're autistic or neurodiverse or to step out of your comfort zone. It's really, really challenging. I can't tell you how many times I just want to sit at home and not do some of the things I'm doing. It's really challenging, especially when you come across people who have had more opportunities than you, or who get more, have had more successes, or don't have the struggles you have, or have had more opportunities handed to them. Sometimes it can be challenging, and for some people have to work a little harder than others, and some don't. It may look that way. And I think a lot of it is we have to learn how to work together too, and see what have you accomplished. How it takes a lot of work to do what you're doing, and it takes a lot of work to write a book. And it is your message is important because, like what you said, people need to understand the sensory overload and what goes on, and that we're not trained to be little spoiled brats throwing ourselves on the floor, kicking and throwing a fit.
What advice would you give to those getting diagnosed late in life?
Oh, I actually have had two people that got diagnosed because I encouraged them to get diagnosed. Be vulnerable. It's okay. Go through the process. You're going to suffer grief. You're going to suffer, feel like you've lost. There's all sorts of emotions you're going to go through. It's okay. Give yourself the time to process and go through those emotions. It took courage to go and get tested. It takes courage to find out that you actually have something like this. And then give yourself time to learn skills to work with it. No one ever gave you the skills or the time to work with it and learn how to navigate it. And it's okay. That means that you have something special and unique to work with that has a different perspective and a different way of doing things than other people. And that means that you have a way of being more innovative. You can be more innovative. You're more resilient, or you can be more resilient. You can be more resourceful than other people. There's so many beautiful things that come with it. But also give yourself the time to process all things that go around that come with it. There's beauty. Is like, think about a seed that gets planted in the ground. And when it has to break open, all the pain it has to go through before, then it has to die in the ground, and then it has to break through the surface, and how it has to grow. And then you see this beautiful flower. That's what it's like. So give yourself that time and enjoy that process and go through that whole process, even when it's painful.
And finally, where can people find out more about you and what you do?
Oh, you can go to the Needs Languages website. That's probably the best place to find me. I do have a YouTube channel called The Needs Languages. I'm on LinkedIn, either under Nicole Schur, The Needs Languages. Everything's under Nicole Schur, Schir, or The Needs Languages. And what I mostly focus on is workplace. So I focus on, workplace trauma, working through that. And I focus on, training HR staff and managers. So if you do have workplace issues and you want me to come talk to your workplace, please do contact me, because it is so important that we start really training our HR staff. We need to have compassion for them because they're humans like us, but they're not getting the training. Believe me, a lot of them aren't getting the training that needs to be out there.
And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Reed Miles. That was Nicole Scherer, and I'll see you in the next one. Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you, Reed. Bye-bye.